You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another brand new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. For today's show, on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving, to get some more perspective about the Rockets' recent surge with four straight wins and 7-9 games, I'm joined by Matt Thomas. Matt, of course, is on Twitter, at SportsMT, and he's host of The Matt Thomas Show, which airs each weekday on Sports Talk 790 from noon until 3 p.m., but beyond that, he's also the PA voice for the Rockets home games and the radio play-by-play voice for road games on the Rockets radio network. That's when Craig Ackerman shifts over to TV. We've had Craig on recently, who I refer to as the voice of the Rockets. And well, I suppose that would make Matt the voice of Toyota Center. So without any further delay, let's get right to the phone lines. Matt, how's it going, my friend?
Ben, I'm wonderful. Yourself?
I cannot complain at all, enjoying these 3 days without basketball. I know it's good to be around the team, but when you have as many games as they had lately, 5 and 8, I know they've got a 3 and 4 night stretch going off. It's good to get a few days off, is it not?
It's kind of crazy because I've been asked by several people, what's up with the strange scheduling? And it's not strange unless you're off. When you're playing, you're like, oh, they're going to be playing tonight. So yeah, after Wednesday, it's Wednesday, Detroit, Friday at Detroit, and then we go to Cleveland right after the game, and then Washington after a day off on Sunday, and then I think it's Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So, you know, why people think it's peculiar, I consider it pleasant because when you have played so many games in such a short amount of days, you'll take the break anytime you get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Rockets collectively did that as well. From all we know, they took Sunday and Monday off entirely. They're now back at work practicing today and getting ready for tomorrow night's home game against the Pistons. And Matt, let's start with that dynamic because you're one of the few guys that really sees these guys, not just at Toyota Center, but obviously you're on the road with them. So I'm just curious, now that they've won 4 in a row, 7 of 9, is the vibe any better now than it was during that 1 and 5 and the 4 and 7 start? Because I know to some degree there was a bit of confidence that the shots would eventually start to fall in and that things would get figured out. But nonetheless, there has to be a certain extra degree of swag, I would think, now that they're actually seeing the results and not just banking on it coming on paper.
Well, here's the thing, and I tell this to people all the time, regardless if I'm traveling with a team or not. You know, it is such, and baseball is the same situation, it's such a marathon that I never see a team, whether it be the Astros get too high or the Rockets too low. And yeah, they were looking at each other like, we got to make some shots, or, hey, we weren't very good on the defensive side of things. But Ben, to be real honest with you, there was never a, oh my God, we got to shake this thing up like tomorrow or we're screwed. There wasn't that. I think there was, we got to figure some things out. We got to play better than this. I think there was the, wow, we're not used to James Harden missing any length of time, that's the hamstring. Chris Paul, you know, kind of nursing an elbow thing, whatever that may be. And then a suspension on top of that. James Ennis going down. I mean, it just, and then the whole Carmelo situation. There just wasn't enough time to be the real Rockets. And I would say probably if everything was done all over again, you know, you can only have so much training camp. You can only have so many preseason games. But my guess, another week to work with the guys would have probably helped. But that will that also be supplanted by the fact that if they're not healthy, you can have preseason for 3 or 4 months and it wouldn't make any difference. So I think with the rotation getting a little stronger and consistent, being able to get, you know, to have a guy like Gary Clark help out, Isaiah Hartenstein to a small extent, getting Gerald Green back, you know, the way the world of Chris Paul and James Harden having to score 35 points a night each night, this isn't there. Defensively, they've stepped up. And so you had a whole bunch of stars aligning at the same time, and thus the reason why the team is playing better. And the one thing I've been most encouraged about is that they're not, it's not like they're beating Brooklyn and Chicago every night. They did beat them early on and during that month. But, you know, Sacramento's been a very pleasant surprise. Denver's been hanging around so far. So, you know, they have been able to beat some of the teams that they're going to eventually have to go over the top of if they want a high seed in the Western Conference playoff time.
You mentioned Chris Paul and James Harden. The data certainly bears out your observations. Chris Paul, when he was struggling with that elbow, he went through a stretch of three straight games in which he was 0 of 13 from three. In his last five games, he's 18 of 30, which is 60%. James Harden, he had the start to the year in which he was actually below 50%, extraordinarily uncharacteristic at the rim. Whereas in the last four games, I saw a stat from Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle tweeted this out yesterday that he's making 76% of his shots within 5 feet of the bucket in his last four games compared to 49% before that. So I think health has a lot to do with, as you said, those two guys bouncing back. The one guy that hasn't yet is Eric Gordon, still hovering about 33% for the year, 25% from three. Is there anything other than just not making shots that seems off with him? Do you consider it just a matter of time, or is there anything else going on with Gordon and his efficiency that, you know, might account for this very sluggish start to the year for him?
You know, I think shooters like Eric can go through slumps, and this has obviously been prolonged. He's still been able to score despite the numbers haven't been spectacular. I think part of it, frankly, and no one would admit to this, it's my hunch, that, you know, we all deal with hearing our names being talked about in trades differently. And you know, look, I am a huge, huge Eric Gordon fan, and I didn't want him to go, and I'm glad he's not going to go. But my guess is that an agent has said, hey, your name is being brought up. And, you know, contract's up after not this season, but the next. So he's probably thinking he's a contract that's trade friendly. I think once those whispers and the Jimmy Butler situation went away and his name wasn't being bandied about, probably set his mind at ease a little bit. So I'm going to give that to 10% of the reason why. And I think that, you know, guys can get out of those slumps, especially with a guy like Eric Gordon, who you've seen, Ben, can stroke 5 or 6 3-pointers in a game, and just like, well, the old Eric Gordon's gone and the new one's back. So on my worry scale of 1 to 10 about where Eric Gordon is, I'd say it's a 3, maybe 4.
Another guy that's really interesting to me when you look at that bench besides Eric Gordon is Gerald Green, because when they started the stretch last week, when they began on the 4-game winning streak, they basically had just an 8-man rotation, the starters plus Eric and the two rookies. And Hartenstein seems capped at about 15 minutes per game tops.
Right.
And while that's certainly good enough to win with, at the same time, there's a reason why NBA teams usually don't start with 8-man rotations in November, because eventually they wear down. We saw some minutes last week, some individual games where PJ Tucker was at 40 plus, Chris Paul was in the upper 30s, and I don't think that's all that sustainable. Gerald Green, to see him come back in that Sacramento game, of course it helps that he made his shots. He struggled shooting to begin the year. He made 5 3-pointers, I think, against the Kings. But more than that, it feels like 9 is a much more sustainable number for Mike D'Antoni. So I'm just curious from your perspective, if I were in Mike's shoes, I think I would sleep a little bit easier now that I've got a 9-man rotation and, you know, Saturday, nobody had to play more than 35 minutes. So in my opinion, the difference between 8 and 9 is pretty significant, in which now you have Gerald back, no one should be overextended, correct?
Yeah, I don't think I can add much more on that to Ben. I do believe Mike D'Antoni worries about 8, and it's crazy your audience may say, well, that's one extra person. That in the world of NBA basketball, playing 48 minutes, that's going to make a huge difference. Because even if Nene was to come back relatively soon, my guess is Nene takes the minutes of Isaiah Hartenstein. He wouldn't necessarily be a third center that would play. You know, if Marquise Chris's game all of a sudden developed a little bit more than it has, he's probably taking Isaiah Hartenstein's minutes. The only player that, you know, if you wanted to add some additional backcourt depth, you felt like you could trust Michael Carter-Williams for any length of time, but the problem is his shooting numbers have just been so porous that you've decided that you just couldn't sacrifice what he might do for you defensively because the offensive numbers just haven't been very good. So Mike D'Antoni, if you look at his legacy as a head basketball coach over his NBA career, look at eight, and be honest with me, 80% of the NBA goes with a 9-man rotation, maybe a 10. But 9 with this group, and to be honest again to you, Ben, James Harden and Chris Paul like to play basketball. Everybody's always worried about they're playing too many minutes or they're playing in the fourth quarter with a team up 16. That's how their motors run, Ben. And I know that people don't want to hear that, but that's how those guys roll. And they'll only sit out if they absolutely have to because of foul trouble or they put in too many minutes early on or their shot is off. But they feel like as the game gets better, so does their game. And I think part of the reason why you still see James playing as many minutes as it has is because of what you mentioned a couple minutes ago. He's finishing at the basket better in these last 5 or 6 games than he certainly did in the first 7 or 8.
We mentioned that last discussion in the context of Mike D'Antoni. another thing on the coaching front that's going to happen relatively soon, I think, is the return of Jeff Vestelic. We haven't had a precise day, but they have said after Thanksgiving. I'm just curious your thoughts on the importance of that, because as I see it, it's not so much that they don't trust Rory Rogers to develop tactical defensive schemes, but it just seems like, especially with those veterans, we've heard PJ talking about Jeff Vestelic, there's just such a high degree of comfort. Maybe it's partly based on the results a year ago, but it just seems like Jeff Vestelic, more than anything, when he gets back, and it's probably a few days away, they said after Thanksgiving, that it just kind of psychologically feels like a shot in the arm. Just curious, as someone that, you know, obviously talks to Mike and travels with them, what you think he represents.
I think Jeff's fantastic. I like Roy. You know, on the floor guys with sabermetrics and analytics, whatever, however you want to call it, so it's a good mesh. And, you know, you got a 67-year-old NBA coach who's been there and done that with a variety of teams. You know, Jeff is obviously very respected. Jeff's not afraid to tell the players to their faces what they're doing right and wrong, and I think you have to kind of have that. But it's not like the defense all of a sudden turned the switch when it was announced that Jeff was coming back. I mean, obviously, you know, fans were probably as fired up as anything else, but this team defensively the last five or six games is a lot better. And just think about what James has had to go in particular. His steal numbers are getting a lot better. Chris has always been a good guy that's been able to take away the basketball from guys. And all the defensive matchups that Harden has to do in those switches where he's having a block in the low block against the center or a guy that's a you know, like a Stephen Adams. And so I'm happy that their defense is getting better, because the narrative was just too entirely simple early in the season as, oh, the Rockets can score, but they can't stop anybody. And I feel like at the worst part of this season, to me, Ben, it was, why isn't this team shooting better? I was way more concerned about its lack of offense. I was worried about its free throw misses. I was worried about Chris Paul not hitting shots in the first half. I was worried about James Harden not finishing the basket, way more so than what they were doing on the defensive side of things. And so now you got both those things coming up together. And for the first time since last season, we're seeing the Rockets of old, especially in that game against Denver, against Indiana, and then most recently against Sacramento. It feels much like the early issues are gone. Doesn't mean they're all resolved, but in a world where the Western Conference is so topsy-turvy right now, of all the years, Ben, the team can kind of struggle out of the gate, this is probably the right one to do it, because no one is really showing dominance right now, especially in the West.
Very true. There's only one game of separation now in the loss column between the Warriors and the Rockets. And to continue on the Vestelic theme, just to go a step higher, I know you've been familiar with Tillman Fertitta for a while, since you're a U of H guy, but how well does it speak to him, his willingness to commit what it takes financially? There have been reports that Jeff got a raise. Of course, it takes something to get him out of retirement. But there was a report from Mark Stein that before they struck the deal with Jeff Vestelic, they were trying to actually get Frank Vogel, a former head coach, to step into that role during the preseason. So to me, it speaks pretty well that it didn't take just the slow start, even in the preseason, and even with a team that's already paying the luxury tax, there's no way around it. At the same time, it looked like, really, even though we didn't know about it in terms of it being on the front burner of the rumors, it sure seems like behind the scenes that Tillman Fertitta was willing to pay what it took, first to make a run at Frank Vogel, who's a former head coach and, of course, has a lot of leverage, but beyond that, then to pay what it takes to get Jeff back. It seems, you know, to me at least, it looks like a pretty positive indicator of his, you know, commitment to winning. Is that a fair characterization of it?
Yeah, Ben, I think it really goes to the all-in mentality. I mean, how in the world, I didn't see another NBA team offering four first-round picks for Jimmy Butler. I haven't heard a team, you know, go get a coach out of retirement and make sure that he gets taken care of, whether it's with family situations or financially. You know, Tillman's a second-year owner, but he's owned a lot of things in his life, and if he notices sales are sluggish at a restaurant or a hotel, he's not going to sit and be patient. And I think Rocket fans should appreciate that. There's really not much more I can add beyond that, except that I'm happy that they weathered the storm. I'm happy that Jeff's coming back, and I think we'll see more of the Rockets, the real Rockets that we saw last year. Now, again, 65 wins last year was incredible, and that's going to be hard to duplicate. But we're seeing the signs of what we loved about this team last year. Intensity on the defensive side, lots of threes. And, oh, by the way, the one thing you and I have not discussed so far is Clint Capella's offensive game the last couple of nights has really picked up, and his shot blocking has picked up. And the trusting that Mike D'Antoni has with playing him beyond 31, 32 minutes, part of it is because he wants to build his stamina. And part of it is also, frankly, you know, while Isaiah Hartenstein has been a nice addition, there's nothing that offensively, you know, it moves as fluid and especially the pick and roll, without having Clint Capela on the floor.
Last topic I want to broach with you is the elephant that's still barely in the room, that being Carmelo Anthony. They issued the statement last week that they would be parting ways, but he's still a part of the roster for the time being. Financially, it's advantageous for him to be claimed rather than go through unclaimed whenever they inevitably put him through the waivers process. Matt, I'm just curious your thoughts. I know that you really respected Carmelo as a man back
when
you got him on Media Day. His interview with you was fantastic. He's been honest. Just curious why you think the Rockets pulled the plug as quickly as they did. Obviously, he wasn't helping the defense, and the team starting 4-7 obviously kind of put a lot of things under the microscope, whereas normally they could have experimented longer. But why do you think that, you know, given that they had been after him, not just this summer, but last summer as well, that they were willing to move on from that experiment as quickly as they did?
You know, it's still a question, Ben, and I guess I'm supposed to give you a deeper answer to this that I'm still trying to figure out. I think everybody's past it, so I'm kind of have to go past it as well. I don't know if it was because his catch-and-shoot mentality, no matter where he was on the floor, as compared to how the Rockets believe in spacing, whether it was the fact that it was a defensive nightmare, him being out there, and that's what we knew the day he got here. It seems strange that an experiment like that would have been cut short the way that it was, but my guess is that when Carmelo signed here, probably he, Daryl, and Mike sat together and said, look, we're going to give this a very short run. If it works, it's going to be awesome for all of us, and if it doesn't work out, we're going to try to find something else to do, because they don't want this to linger on 25, 30, 35 games. So I wouldn't say it's one of those things that people aren't willing to talk about. I just think they're all kind of confused and disappointed, and some are, you know, probably, I wouldn't say some are happy, but some are like, yeah, we knew this wasn't going to work, but let's give it a try. It's almost like, and I'm a terrible example giver, Ben, but maybe it's a high-ranking executive of a company that just retired that wants to come consult for a competitor, and his ideas may have worked 5 or 10, 15 years ago, but the new company with a new ownership and a new group just don't want to hear anymore. And so maybe the consultant, a.k.a. hired gun or whatever you want to call Carmelo, just came in, tried to do some things, couldn't mesh with what the new philosophy was or the philosophy of Mike D'Antoni, and they just said, you know, instead of trying to let this linger, or perhaps in Carmelo's defense, the legacy of Carmelo Anthony shouldn't be a bunch of DNP CDs on his scorecard. Is it better to find something somewhere else to go, or maybe call it a career as compared to not being a part of an active Rockets rotation?
Do you buy that there's any correlation, and I'll say from the outset that I don't, I think it's coincidental, between the return of Jeff Bezdelic and the exit of Carmelo Anthony? Because there have been some people that have been pushing this really ever since September that, oh, the reason Bezdelic retired is because 10 plus years ago in Denver, he didn't get along that well with Carmelo. Now they're trying to integrate him. And now as soon as Bezdelic, the announcement comes that he's coming back, now Carmelo is on the way out the door. To me, that's coincidental, just as it seems pretty clear that Mike moved on, Mike D'Antoni, from whatever his issues with Carmelo were in New York. I can't imagine that anything 10 plus years ago in Denver with Jeff Bezdelic was the driving force one way or another. Nonetheless, that talk is out there. I'm just curious if you put any stock in it at all, that there's a relationship there, or if you just kind of overlook it as far as the history with Jeff Bezdelic and Carmelo.
Well, I would say on the 0 to 100% scale, I put it at 2%. same thing I would have done with Mike D'Antoni. But Mike, you know, Mike and Jeff respect each other and vice versa. If Mike D'Antoni calls Jeff Bezdelic and says we're going to give Carmelo a shot, I think it's in his coaching blood that Bezdelic's not going to say, oh, that I can't work with that. I mean, that's silly. Jeff Bezdelic doesn't make Carmelo Anthony a first-team All-Pro. Jeff Bezdelic is the defensive specialist for 13 or 14 Houston Rocket players, not Carmelo Anthony. So I would put just about no stock into it. I think there's a lot of other external factors, nothing to do with basketball, that I either can't speak to or don't know of, that probably have led to his retirement. But then again, a lot of guys get settled, things get taken care of at home, and the coaching fire in the belly gets going again. And when the owner of the basketball team calls you and says, hey, we need you, it's awful hard to say no. And I think I'm going to chalk that up to the return of Jeff Bezos, like way more than anything about Carmelo Anthony leaving the team.
I agree. Matt, before we go, last question. Thanksgiving is Thursday, then we're officially in Christmas season earlier than ever.
Yep.
Number one, tell people what you're getting me for Christmas. And secondly, tell everyone what you're getting Chives McGee for Christmas.
All right, first and foremost, if you follow me on Twitter, at SportsNT, I did announce that I got you an NBA rule book for you for Christmas. You cannot open it until Christmas Day, even though you have the gift. And Chives, we're going to get him a date, preferably one that's not a robot. So, Chives, if you're listening, mechanical is okay for every once in a while, but it's time to really feel the real scent and touch of a woman. And that's the reason why we're going to get you on one of the 19 dating apps that you've not been blocked on, so you may be able to actually have a real date and take someone out to a movie or dinner or a Rockets game, for that matter.
Good stuff. Folks, he's Matt
Thompson. By the way, is this your podcast?
Yes.
You have been very nice to officials so far this year. I haven't felt the angst. Are you changing your feeling about how tough their jobs are?
No, but we haven't had that many Scott Foster games yet either. Keep that in mind.
Zero Scott Foster games.
Yeah, I did not recall any. And I'm trying to take a step back because, you know, it's the regular season. You got to let it breathe. It's one out of 82. I think I'll be back in peak form by the playoffs. But this year, you know, I'm trying to let it breathe. And plus, you know, if you go off on every single game, then to some degree, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. Then when things actually do go awry, as they did in Game 6 and parts of Game 7 a year ago, it kind of diminishes your credibility a little bit. So I'm trying to...
I will tell you this. There are a bunch of new officials this year. The one guy that I like a lot that's going to probably move up the food chain fairly quickly, we've seen him a couple times, is a young man by the name of J.B. DeRosa. His dad, Joe, is a longtime NBA referee. Now he's a college official. I like his game, and we've seen him a couple of times. So, you know, I feel like a lot of times we as media like to take shots at referees who don't do a good job. Zach Zarber, we had the other night, he's one of my favorites. He's just fantastic as a person and as a game caller. But among the new crop this year, this DeRosa kid, I think, is going to be pretty good. So I think we're going to be in pretty good hands with him. At least early on, it's felt that way.
Sounds good. Good insight. Matt, thanks so much for the time. Folks, he's on Twitter, at SportsMT. And, of course, you can listen to the Matt Thomas Show every noon to 3 each afternoon on Sports Talk 790. And, of course, you can hear him at the Rockets games at Toyota Center, including tomorrow night, Rockets Pistons behind the mic on PA duty and on the Rockets radio network, which you'll have the call this weekend when they're in Detroit and Cleveland Friday and Saturday, correct?
And Monday in Washington, too, yes.
Good point. Matt, thanks so much for the time. We'll have you on again soon, okay?
Anytime.
Great stuff there with Matt Thomas. Apologies for the brief technical difficulties, but we did get it sorted out. Thanks to him for taking the time to join us. Thanks to you for listening. And with that, I think we can put a bow on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving episode. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. But if you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it, as always, is on Twitter, the home for real-time analysis. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show has a handle at Locked On Rockets. I've also got a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Always, you can access our prior content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries. We've got some great introductory specials, pretty much whatever we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, if you've not subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Megaphone, Spotify, the odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us, because here at Locked On Rockets, part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network with local experts across not just the NBA, but the NFL, Major League Baseball, college sports. And based on the collective strength of that network, we are available on a number of platforms. So if you have not subscribed to us, please do, because we're probably available at your listening provider of choice. And in addition to subscribing, if you'd be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, when you are at those platforms, why don't you search for Locked On Texans? If you're a Houston sports fan, you probably watch these other teams as well. The Texans, the hottest team in the NFL, 7 consecutive games, and they've got a big spotlight game next Monday night against the rival Tennessee Titans. Chance to win 8 in a row as the Texans make a push, not just for the division title, but a bye and even home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. If you want to hear what's going on over there on Kirby, I strongly encourage you to listen to Robert Land and Brian Patterson, my friends who host Locked On Texans. They're the sister show to Locked On Rockets across this great Locked On podcast network. So with the plugs out of the way, this is where we will leave off. As always, thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Matt Thomas for joining us. And come back tomorrow when we'll be breaking down actual basketball again as the Rockets resume play Wednesday evening against the Detroit Pistons. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Have a happy beginning to your Thanksgiving holiday. And come back soon and join us right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.